Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Podcast, coming to you from the beautiful studios of RPPFM, the Voice of Peninsula, 98.7, 98.3 on your dial. Today, we're going to be talking Santos Tour Down Under, as well as some of the latest and greatest topics from the world of grassroots sports, including the latest resources that we can provide you and information on all the latest grants available to clubs out there. As usual, along for the ride, I have my co-host, Mr. Steve Pallas. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Radio, brought to you from the beautiful studios of RPPFM, 98.7, 98.3 FM on your dial, the voice of the peninsula. We are talking Santos Tour Down Under, as well as all the latest in the world, or from the world of grassroots sports, including the resources that we can provide to you, as well as the latest in grant information that is available for your clubs. And along for the ride, as per usual, I have my co-host, Mr. Steve Pallas. Welcome to the show, Mr. Pallas.
G'day, Joe. How are you going?
I am going very, very well. Now, I hope you survived the new year intact.
Yeah, it's tough work doing strategic planning on the banks of the Murray River. Joe, and I hear you laughing, and I find that disrespectful and not understanding the level and depth of thinking that goes on under the gum trees with, and we are a very big supporter of the Good Sports program, but sitting under the gum trees with a couple of quiet ales is very conducive to my strategic planning process, Joe.
And I must say, you've come back in fine fettle. In the horse race parlance, I'd say you've been out in a good paddock.
Been in a good paddock.
Yeah, right. And you're carrying a bit of condition.
Carrying a bit of condition, yes, Joe. But while you're full of compliments, part of sitting under the gum trees was about reflecting, and I thought it would be good to just reflect on the show as it is so far, because we've had just had amazing year on the radio show, Joe. I mean, coming up to Christmas, 75 odd thousand people have actually followed us on the radio show.
Absolutely, it's been huge.
Downloaded.
Absolutely huge response that I don't think any of us could have ever imagined. Over 75,000 downloads. That's really incredible. And testament to the desire for the community to have good grassroots sports related content. So
when they couldn't get that, Joe, they started listening to us.
Yes, absolutely. Now look, we've had some incredible guests.
So are your favourite, Jake?
Well,
run me through.
Look, let's start off with Big Jeff Kennett, because I was one of those people who didn't mind him as the Premier of Victoria, wasn't so fond of him as the President of Hawthorn, but respect him enormously as the Chairman of Beyond Blue, and the wealth of, I would call it, common sense wisdom that he carries around with him as a result of the environment that he's been part of when it comes to mental health. He's just got that ability to slice through the grey and get to the core of the matter and make the information easily digestible for lay people like myself who you know, none of us are experts in the field of mental health here, so we need to rely on what the experts have to say in this ever-increasing set of challenges that mental health provides for us at grassroots sports club level. And I just thought Jeff was just able to talk to those challenges extremely, extremely well, and I really enjoyed having him on the show. Now, he can be, he can be to the point, but I thought that you handled him very well, Steve.
I didn't handle him, Joe. I did not handle him whatsoever.
And extracted his very, very best. So for me, that was one of the highlights of the year.
Well, the reason we do the show, isn't it, Joe, is to pick a topic and find an expert and really delve deeply into it for half an hour and But some of them are a lot more lighthearted than others. And I from a research point of view, I found the two guests that we had from the Australian Sports Commission, Cecilia Hemener and Rob Bennett, they came on to talk about the market segmentation research into volunteering and to participation as two of the most important guests that we had on from what we can learn from the research. From a research perspective, I also really enjoyed the two Mark Williamson from the Lawn Life Saving Club and Paul Shannon from Life Saving Victoria talking about how their clubs create this. Well, Mark was talking about how Lawn became went from 13 blokes jumping off a pier to one of the biggest open water, if not the biggest open water swim in the world. But Paul was talking about how life-saving create that culture of volunteering. And I found that those guests very, very powerful. But the two interviews that I enjoyed the most, Joe, were the two interviews that we did with the absolutely outstanding and lovely Sam Squires, the Channel 9 news reporter from 9 News in Brisbane. And I particularly enjoyed, and we were really talking about, Sam runs her own website called sportet.com.au, and she'd published an article, 10 most powerful female leaders in world sport, and in no particular order, but she had people of the caliber of Condoleezza Rice and those sorts of people, and I found that fantastic. The other one that I really, really enjoyed was Nicola Zagami, Joe, the Australian water polo silver medalist, and she kind of took us behind the scenes of the what it was like to be in the village, the Olympic village, and seeing Roger Federer and Serena Williams and Usain Bolt and people of those calibers. So I must admit I enjoyed all the guests, but they're the couple that spring to my mind.
Yeah, I think, look, we had a lot of elite athletes, Joe Weston, Mark Bradke, that come on the show, and we had some Olympic silver medalists.
David Morris.
Yeah, that come on the show as well. So just listening to their perspective on what it takes to be an elite athlete was enlightening. But for me, Mitchell Johnson was an incredible interview. And for those of you who remember, it wasn't too long ago, we interviewed this fella called Mitchell Johnson, part of a rugby league club.
President of the Moree Boomerangs, Joe.
Who had an absolutely endemic culture of, or systemic, I should say, culture of
unsatisfactory behaviour.
Unsatisfactory behaviour, thanks. I've spoken to a lot of clubs in and around where I live, and often with these systemic types of behaviour that are part of the culture of the club, that they just put it in the too hard basket and they just can't work out how to change it. Well, this bloke was able to change this behaviour, which involved drinking and playing up and fights and these kind of things at the club. He was able to change that behaviour, him and his committee, so that there's no alcohol involved and the club still prospered. And to me, that was the most powerful grassroots sports story that I think I heard for the whole year. That he, this bloke and his club and his committee could change this bad behaviour and turn it into a real meeting place for their community is just just speaks volumes to me. So I really, really enjoyed that. And of course, Kevin Milstein from the Reagan Milstein Foundation, who collects unwanted sports gear or pre-used sports gear and donates it to the different to kids in need around the country and, in fact, around the world. He was really, really interesting to talk to. So, like you said, we get a lot out of producing this show, and sometimes you're just sitting here at the microphone and you're listening to these people and you just go, oh wow.
Yeah, the stories are amazing, aren't they? Because we went all over the world for the stories, Joe. We had, Andy Hood was another one, the head of the AFL Northern Territory in Central Australia, and his league's stance on alcohol, and Lucinda Coombs out of Alice Springs. But Jason Arnold, the coach of the Canadian Women's Australian Football Team, who went on to win the International Cup. So, and we spoke to the ladies in the Pilbara, what sport was like in the Pilbara. But we also took the time to look forward a little bit, Joe. And one of the interviews I really enjoyed was Andrew Collins from Fox Sports Pulse. And Andrew's no longer with Fox Sports Pulse. But he was speaking about the future and what the future holds, and video streaming is going to be a very big part of the future. And so it was interesting listening to Andrew kind of predict what's going to come ahead. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it was...
Shiloh Curtis as well. And speaking of the future, we've just heard numbers this week of female participation in AFL in the Northern Territory, which has jumped from like 50 participants a few years ago to over 700 now. And just to listen to her talk about the game, the Codes development here in Victoria was fantastic as well. So... all aspects. We come at it from all aspects of sport, from the development to the execution to the enjoyment to the participation to the sharing. It's been enlightening.
I tell you, Jane, it'd be very remiss of us to miss one of the special guests this year, and that was our own Pam Irvine.
Of course.
Yeah. I'll point out that you did not mention her, and I did. Who was the president? The new president
is.
Was at the time a new president of a tennis club, and so to get her perspective on what it was like as a tennis club was fantastic. President, a fantastic interview. But looking towards next year, Joe, we've got a couple of different themes, and one of the themes that we're going to continue is to get the professional sporting clubs to tell their story. And so Pam, who does organise all our interviews, don't think there's a person she can't get to, although I'm going to give her the Prime Minister next year and see if she can get to the Right Honourable Tony Abbott. But we've kind of got calls and started discussions with Eddie Maguire and Eddie Maguire's people, and David Koch and Russell Crowe. She's pretty keen to get Russell Crowe, James Brayshaw, and James Sutherland from cricket, and we'll continue to get the best stories from professional sport, and then find out what we can learn from professional sport and convert it back down. We'll also come at it from we'll continue to go on at the communication, social media. I want to really start to explore the future some more, Joe.
I want to talk quickly about that access. We've been privileged to have some great access to some people who are really at the pointy end of their sport or their organisation. And I mentioned Fergus Watts. He was on our show. He had some amazing insights into marketing, as well as Anthony Grimmer from the Football Federation of Victoria. Again, incredible. He was at the time general manager of commercial marketing and communication. So these folks are keen to talk to us because they know that their experience is being passed on to the grassroots sports community, and it also affords us incredible access, which we hope to continue on next year, don't we, mate?
We do indeed, Joe, and it's actually been an honour and a privilege to bring the show out each week.
Yeah, absolutely has. So make sure you stick around because we're going to continue with the show after this short break where we bring you some of the station sponsors' messages.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Steve Pellis and Joe Novella, another Sports Community digital production, courtesy of www.sportscommunity.com.au. Okay, welcome back to Sports Community Radio here on RPPFM 98.7, 98.3. Podcast all around the world. We have an absolutely very special guest with us today.
Sporting royalty, Joe.
Sporting royalty, Steve. We're not used to this. We have a Olympic medalist who's joining us today. His name is David Morris. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm not sure if sporting royalty is quite right, but I'll take it.
Anyone who gets an Olympic silver medal, David, in our world, actually anyone who gets to an Olympics, actually anyone who can spell Olympics in our world, David, is sporting royalty, let me assure you. But silver medalist at the Olympics, wow.
Yeah, maybe, David, if you can... Your sport is aerial skiing. Maybe if you can just give us a brief rundown of how you got into the sport, you know, the early years of how you discovered it. And just let the listeners know how you went about doing that.
It was very by chance, as a lot of, you know, great things are. I was just in my gymnastics club. I've been a gymnast since I was three, and I've also known how to ski, so it was the perfect combination for the sport, but I'd never heard of it before. And Kirsty Marshall, who's an ex-Olympian in our sport, she came into my gym one day, saw me doing flips, and just came up to me and said, "Hey, look, would you like to try aerial skiing?" And, you know, skiing, and you do flips with skis on, and we have a sort of dodgy sort of facility out at Lilydale, and she offered to train me for free just to test it out, and I was like, "Yep, that sounds amazing." And it was just by chance that she came in at that particular moment that I was there, and she basically picked one boy in the whole country to start the sport, because we don't have any boys than myself, and she got it right with the first pick, so that was pretty good.
So what exactly did she see in you that made her pick you out?
I don't know, it'd be like boasting about myself, I guess.
But no, that's all right, we allow that.
We do that all the time.
And in fact, you just stop us doing it, and our boasting is rubbish because
we're not Olympic silver medalists.
Absolutely.
We can't even spell it.
So please feel
free. I'm not good at other things, you know, just my thing. I think she just saw just sort of, you know, having a bit of guts, a bit of aggression in the sport, and I know if I can say it, natural ability.
But you must have had some leaping or some kind of core strength attribute those kind of things that kind of set you apart. And I mean, what I'm getting at, I suppose, is there'd be our listeners out there that have kids that have shown a really keen interest in gymnastics but might be looking for other sports. What kind of competencies do they need to I mean, obviously they need mountain and snow, but what other things do they need to get into the sport?
I mean, there's a lot of things. It is, like, ability is one thing, but I've met a lot of athletes with amazing abilities who just don't have the mental ability to do the sports. Like, I was nothing special. I was a scrawny little kid and not, you know, overly built or anything, not amazingly talented, but I just had a will to go and get things done. So when they said, "Hey, we're going to move on to the next skill," I went and did it. And, you know, we have a really dodgy facility out at Lilydale. It's like a leech pond, basically. If, I don't know what's at the bottom of that. It could be bodies. No one knows. Wouldn't even. Yeah. I'm not willing to go down to the bottom. So, you know, we start training there, and then we head overseas to train at a lot better facilities, and that's when you can really test out your abilities and stuff. But, to be completely honest, I was nothing special. If you sort of saw me, like, people see me in the gym, they're like, "You're not really much, are you?" I'm like, "No. Just a small little kid, and I when I want to get something done, I just go and get it done." It's more determination. Like, skills is one thing, but you have to really want to go and get something in order to sort of be more elite.
I love that. An Olympic medalist telling us that that he was nothing special.
Well, Scrawny really summarizes this radio station, a studio.
That's what it is. There's plenty of different builds, and I was not great at gymnastics. I'm not the best skier in the world. Put them together, and I was okay, but I just worked at it really hard until I managed to figure out exactly how to get it done.
Now, David, I'm the type of bloke whose knees start knocking when I'm 2 feet off the ground. So, you know, when you're talking about the mental attributes that are required, obviously a lot happens above the neck. And maybe just talk us through the kind of preparation that you go through before you go into your routine. Are you the type that tries to get a bit of clarity, that clear space? Do you employ breathing techniques? I mean, what is it? How do you go about that? Because, you know, just watching you guys puts the fear of life into me. So I can't imagine what it'd be like actually standing at the top of the jump waiting to go down, knowing that you've got, what, two jumps at you know, to decide to as the culmination of 4 years' work. I mean, it's incredible. So what goes through your mind?
It's a lot, and it's hard to describe to, you know, the average person. So I don't mean to offend anyone, but, like, a lot goes through the mind. You know, at the Olympics, it was 12 years of work for that moment. But when I'm up there, look, I won't lie, I'm pretty scared when I go. It is very scary, and it's a very real danger when you're up, you know, 15 metres above the ground, so I could really get injured. But I know that deep down I have practiced.
So you're thinking about that when you're up there? Because I think 99% of us just look at you guys in general and just think, oh, they're you know, they're calm. They're it's fine. It's
like, we have to show that we're calm, because if you act all scared, then you start believing it. So like, I'm scared every time, but you can convince yourself that it's going to be fine by acting calm. And I've tried focusing, and what actually helps me to relax is actually to go up into the crowd and like take selfies and sign autographs and kiss babies or whatever they want. And that actually helps me sort of focus, because I forget what's going on, and then I get back up to the top of the jumps. So I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just kind of going to go now and just get it done. I try to be as casual as possible, but it is nerve-wracking. It's pressure of competition. It's a dangerous sport. And I do a couple breathing things. I count to five and I take five deep breaths and repeat that process until my heart rate goes back down. And then I just try and set myself in the same sort of mental zone and, you know, same heart rate as I have on any given training session, and just try and repeat that in competition. It takes a lot of practice to do it, but I've had it for a long time, so you get it right on the right day, it's good.
Mm. Well, there's no getting away from the fact that yours is an incredibly risky sport. Maybe
they all are, actually. Yeah, well, the sports are. Mine just, I think mine's the most visually impressive looking one. I say that with full respect for the other sports. Like, I would not do ski cross, I would not do moguls or bobsled. They're very, very dangerous, but mine just looks more dangerous because people can't relate to it.
Yeah, and have you had some injuries along? I'm sure you've had injuries. I mean, one, tell us about them, and two, talk to us about the mental space you have to get into to work your way back. Because I'd imagine...
That's a big part of my career, that I had a really big injury at one point. I've had a couple. I had hip surgery from one major crash. I tore up all the ligaments in my hip, and as a boy, and I was like, yeah, I'm fine. I kept training, and of course made it 10 times worse. Had to have surgery from that, and it took me out of the sport for a fair few months. And I actually ended up quitting the sport for a year because of that, because I wasn't a mature enough athlete at the time to go from having such a good skill level back to learning how to walk properly again. I wasn't prepared for that. And so I ended up quitting, but in doing so, realized how much I loved the sport. And then a couple of months later, I came back, but it was the rehab process, learning how to be a disciplined, disciplined rehabilitation. And it taught me how to be more disciplined in training and in the sport. And I came back way better because I'd had a bad injury. So sometimes, unfortunately, you have to go through like something really bad to just learn a lot about yourself, and it's unfortunate that has to happen, but that's usually sort of the key thing. I've had that. I've only had one concussion in 12 years, which I think has got to be some sort of record. I just seem to land all the time, which is nice. And probably the one that sounds the worst is I have a blood clot in my spine from one landing on water.
Yeah, you're right. That does
straight
sound
up and
bad.
Down, yeah. It's not as bad as the hip, but I just landed straight up and down in the water from, 15 metres. I forgot to bend my legs, as normal people do, because I was just trying to be super awesome, and I was pimping out my jump, and I just landed straight up and down, bled into my spinal cord, couldn't feel my legs for about 3 hours. Took, 4 days off and kept training.
Four days?
Yeah, I didn't know what it was at the time, and neurosurgeon saw it, and he's like, look, that's obviously not ideal. We can get it removed, put a syringe in there, pull it out, but it'll take 4 months of time to recover. And at that particular time, I didn't have 4 months available because the Olympics were coming up, so I just told him to leave it. So I've still got it in my back. I've had it there for about 7 years now, but I just deal with it.
That, in a nutshell, is what makes you a champion and why the likes of us will never get there, because
basically says, you're an idiot. Get yourself maintained and see a physio.
I can't believe that. I mean, well, it's cheap. Jeepers. I know you said you're scared when you're at the top of the jump, but to work your way through injuries like that and be able to not ignore them but put them to the side while you compete is
Mean, everyone has injuries, everyone's scared. It's just whether you can push past it. And like when I'm up there and I'm up in the air, it is, it's scary. I'm like, this, real danger. I could really hurt myself, but I know that I'm ready to be there in that moment. I wouldn't be doing the skill if I wasn't ready to do it. So deep down, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be fine. And 99% of the time, I am fine.
Well, one of the things that we get the absolute pleasure on this show, David, is to talk to really successful people like yourselves.
I only came second. I didn't even win. I'm like the best of all the losers, let's be honest.
Again, our benchmark of success is be able to spell Olympics, not just make it the Olympics, right? So, but in all seriousness, and there's two things from my perspective that separates, you and the rest of us. One is that fierce mental strength, and The other one is an incredible group of people supporting you along the journey. So tell us about the people that have supported you. I mean, you've talked about Kirsty picking you out of the, you know, the one boy in all of Australia. Yeah. But, you know, what's the team David around you that's supported you through the journey?
I have a massive team of people that do not get as much credit as they deserve, and some people aren't even aware that they're on my team. Like, first of all, family, of course, family and friends. I've had, you know, the bank of mum and dad from the very, very start, which is super handy, of course. I've taken a lot out of the bank, got to pay it back one day. But I've had people, just the smallest little things, like when I started the sport, we have an all-girls team and they've done very, very well. They didn't have a men's program. They didn't want any boys actually training. So I was rejected for the first 2.5 years. And I had coaches, other athletes, international coaches just help me out. Like, I went overseas and they helped coach me and helped me make little connections, and just, you know, volunteers that would turn up and help at the jump site or help at the pool deck when we're training into water and stuff. All these little things that people helped me with when I had, you know, I wasn't part of the team. I had no proper coaches, no program, and people just add a little bit of input or tell me, you know, this is how we do it and here's how you can avoid this problem. And they're unaware that they helped in just a little bit, but it all added up to a full career. So it does come down to all the people around you in your network, if you know how to use them. I learned how to use people. I said the wrong way. I didn't use them. I learned how to get the most out of everyone around me to get what I needed. And of course, I give back when I can. But you can't do these things on your own. We like to think we can. As a boy, especially, you know, I'm super macho. I try to do everything on my own, but it was impossible. And then 2 years ago, I decided, you know what, I'm going to accept all the help that I'm being offered. And I took it and I started to get really good and started winning medals and got to, you know, second Olympics and stuff. But it most certainly was not on my own. I just don't give enough credit and maybe not enough attention to the people who have helped me. I do feel bad for that, but hopefully they know they've helped me. And if I see them, I'll let them know. But yeah, it's a very big team effort.
One of the challenges for any sportsman, elite sportsman, and of course, and you touched on it through the bank of mum and dad, is funding and getting money to go and compete. How does that happen for you? Do you have any other financial sources other than your parents?
When you start, it is just parents, and you know, I'm thanking them every day for that. But as for our sport, like it's not the worst off. We always complain like, oh, I don't get enough, just because what we naturally do. But my sport's actually quite well off because we get good results.
Yeah.
As you get better and better, you get the government funding, so it gets more and more things paid for. And as you get up into like the top five in the world, like, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. But as you get quite close to the top, just about everything is paid for. So we don't really get money, but we don't have to pay for everything. So we come out even on nothing. But it's like, it's not a career, but it's just, it keeps you maintaining sort of your course. So it's tricky and it's very hard to find sponsors, as you know, any athlete knows, but especially in winter sports. Australia is not a winter sport country. People don't know much about it, so we don't really get the same exposure or anything. So it's very hard to find sponsors. So, I mean, I'm happy to come off, you know, level, but it'd be nice to make some money from my job, because I do put a lot of work into it.
Absolutely, you do. Aside from your job, when you've got some downtime, what are your interests? What are your other interests outside of your competition?
Well, I'm actually a teacher, qualified. It took me 9 years to do my 4-year course, because I did it when I was training. I think I set a new record at the university.
That sounds like most Australian university students.
Oh, I don't think that's anything out of the ordinary.
that's fine. So I do teaching, I coach gymnastics and some trampolining and tumbling, and I've coached some other skiers on tramp and off the ramp and stuff, and I do talks at schools, like motivation talks. I do presentation nights, corporate gigs, that sort of thing, just telling my story and what I learned, how I became a professional at what I do, and how the same things we're talking about, like how to use a network of people and how you learn from the start and work your way up, all these things that people know, but when you tell it from a sporting perspective, it makes things a little bit more obvious. Like, you can't just go up and do the hardest skill on the first day, and it's obvious. But when people are working, they're like, oh, I just want to get this project done. And it's like, wait, you have to actually build up to the end product first so it's good and you don't mess it up. So I just go and talk about things that I've learned from a sporting perspective and relate it back to real life, and it seems to go quite well.
Yeah.
David, how do people get in touch with you to speak? Because my My wife and daughter were at the recent Leader Sports Awards and had the pleasure of sitting on
we
your
had
table.
A lovely chat.
Yeah, well, it's hard to shut them up, to be fair. But
I talk about myself so much, no one got a word in, don't worry.
Oh, so I find that hard to believe with those two. But anyway, I best we've stopped bagging my wife and daughter because nothing good ever comes out of that.
Danger zone.
But how do people – and she came back and spoke – both of them came and spoke about – you know, talking to you and said, you've got to get you on, got to get David on the show because it was fantastic. He comes at things differently and, you know, great story to tell. So how do people get in touch with you and how do they, so to engage you as a corporate speaker or come to their school, how do they touch base with you and get in touch with you?
Easiest way would be on my website, and I've got that all set up, got all the social media things, but the website is aerialskier.com. It's hard to spell aerial, you know, A-E-R-I-A-L, skier.com, one word. I've got, you know, pictures, videos, all the details about speaking and that sort of things, and that's the best way to contact me. It's got an email address on there if people are interested. And look, I've been speaking for the last 5 or 6 years. I really do enjoy it, and it's getting better and better. It started off, you know, just like, here's a little bit of my story, and after my first Olympics, I came 13th, and it sort of ended there, and people were like, well, you didn't win. I'm like, no, that's real life, actually. I'm telling you what happened. And so over the last couple of years, the story's just built and built, which is nice, and it ends on a silver medal, which is obviously good. Possibly more to come, but it's nice when people see the work sort of, you know, pay off.
I was going to ask about the more to come before. I'm really keen to talk about the training facility that you're keen to build, but what does the future hold for you? Does it hold another Olympics and that gold medal?
I would love it to do that. Unfortunately, it's one of these sports, you know, I should have taken something like lawn bowls up where, you know, worst injury might be a pulled hamstring. I would love to, but if my body doesn't hold up, I don't have control over that. So I maintain it as best as I can. And if it can hold up for 4 more years, I'll push all the way through. But at any time I can have a career ending crash or something can go wrong. And I'm aware of that and I accept that risk because that's what makes the sport exciting. But I would like to go another round and, you know, have a real shot at a gold medal. I did this time, but another couple of years will put me up there with, you know, maybe a certain medal as a result. But we can never predict those things. But it'd be nice.
Now, I'm not sure whether you're one of these people who Google yourself.
I do, so that's right. I think my wiki page comes up first. I've checked to make sure it's, you know.
Yeah, and a very interesting wiki page. Carlton supporter, I see. And,
if we hadn't known that, you wouldn't have been on the show.
and a cricketer. And one thing that really grabs my interest there is that you got a keen interest in online videos.
Yeah, I do a lot of editing and photography. Like, I'm not the best, but I love making videos, and they're all up on my athlete Facebook page and on the website. Just some entertaining, some are part of the sport, some teach people things, some are meant to be inspirational, but that's my sort of other hobby when I'm not teaching or coaching or training, is I make videos, and it's just stimulates my brain, keeps me doing things.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic, and people can see them. Is it attached to your website, or
there's pictures on the website, but I think on my athlete Facebook page, you can just look up David Morris athlete, it'll come up. But you know, there's videos of comps, there's videos of bad days of training when I crash. I'm like, look, people, you know, I have bad days too. Not many people post the bad stuff that happens, you know, terrible days of training and crashes, but it happens very frequently. And the problem with elite athletes is people watch us at the Olympics and they're just so overwhelmed because that's all they see is the end product of years and years of work.
Yeah.
And they just can't comprehend, you know, how I could never do that. But if you saw us from day one and saw all our crashes and our terrible days, we become normal people again.
Now, both Steve and I are very interested in your crowdfunding campaign. I wonder if you could just spend a few moments, just let us know what it is that you're trying to raise funds for and how it's all going.
So what we're trying to push for at the moment is a training facility in Australia. And I can see both sides of it. Some people are like, oh, you know, you want to fight just for aerialists. But the truth is, you know, yes, we would use it. So would every other country, because it would be the only facility in the world that wouldn't freeze over. So most other countries, you can only use it for a couple months. So we would like a water training facility so we don't have to go overseas, because we're at the mercy of like the US team when we're in the US and the Swiss team and all these other teams. They give us training times and they give us, you know, all the worst ones. So we could have our own times, be able to recruit people who want to start the sport. They could come and do, you know, simple tryouts without having to be shipped overseas just to see if you're even good enough. It would just be be great for our sport. It'd be great for a couple of other sports that could also use the facility. I know it's expensive. I think it's like $8 million to build one or something. We have five. We just need a little bit more. Well, no, a little bit more, $3 million, just a sport now. But they started to build one up in Queensland, and the government changed hands and they cut that, and we got really excited for a while and then it was gone. So it is selfish on us. You know, we would like a train facility for ourselves, but, you know, to talk ourselves up.
So how do people contribute to the campaign?
That one, not even sure. I think you'd have to contact the government, you know, government bodies for that, Olympic Winter Institute of Sport or the Australian Olympic Committee and things. It's a lot of money. I'm not sure, you know, every little bit would help, of course, but it's one of those things that we're not sure if it will happen or won't. It's very frustrating, but, you know, that's how it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it'd be ideal to have a state-of-the-art training base in your own country. That's for sure. David, we've absolutely enjoyed you being on the show today. You're very refreshing to talk to. You're modest, but, you know, you're not fooling us for a minute. We know that you've got a determination and a will to succeed, and that's what's driven you to the heights of your sport. So on behalf of Steve and myself, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Oh, my pleasure. It's good. I just like, you know, I like people to know that we're just normal people. We had to work from the start, but if I can, you know, talk myself up a little bit, I work very, very hard, and I've worked very hard for a long time. And when I got my medal, I held it and I was like, you know what? I deserve this. Mm-hmm. It wasn't surprising. No one who knew me was surprised because, like, you've worked hard for this. So
and that's
I don't like to boast about it, but I got it. And I was like, yep, that's what happens when you work hard.
And that's why we call you Australian Sporting Royalty.
Thanks, David.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Jonah Vella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, we've come to that time of the show again, unfortunately, when we have to say goodbye. You've been listening to us, Sports Community Radio, here from the studios of RPPFM 98.7, 98.3 on your dial, the voice of the peninsula. You can follow us from our website, www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can get our latest podcasts if you've missed a few episodes, and a whole lot of other great information, including the latest in grants and resources such as how to develop your sponsorship packages and run your annual general meetings, for example. Okay, so we hope you've enjoyed the show. From myself, Jonah Vella.
And myself, Steve Pallas. Thank you for making us part of your sports community.